I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
Good evening. Welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. When you look at the Las Vegas Raiders as far as the AFC picture, currently I know that we are still months away from the start of training camp and the beginning of the season, but it's always good to kind of gauge where they are, where they can possibly improve, and where they can possibly see themselves at the conclusion of the season. To discuss all of this, one of the best people at breaking down film, Ryan Holmes. Good evening, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. Now, I want to take it by – do you want to take this by division or do you want to take this by conference first?
Let's go division.
Okay, division. As we know, four teams, Raiders, Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers. Now, we're going to start with – organizational structure. What do you think the Las Vegas rate as far as organizational structure?
In the AFC West, it's clear that Kansas City's number one as far as top-down organization, the GM and the head coach being on the same page. I would put the Raiders probably third. I'd probably lean just the Chargers at this point, you know, the new head coach. The ownership, I just put it just a notch above the Raiders. But the Raiders, Broncos, and Chargers are kind of all sitting right there in the middle. The Broncos have their issues. The Raiders have their issues. The Chargers have had some issues. I think the new stadium there in L.A. is going to give them some stability. Brandon Staley, the coach, is going to give them some stability. And then I believe Tom Telesco is still the GM there. He's been there for quite a while. So I would rank them in that order.
Now, GM, speaking of GM, you mentioned Tom Telesco with the Chargers. What do you rank Mike Mayock
in the division or in the overall in the NFL?
We'll start with the division, and then we'll kind of after the first commercial break, we'll spin back to NFL, we'll spin back to AFC. But right now for the division,
I would say third. I would put Kansas City. I think it's Brett Veach first. Then I would go Tom Telesco, Mike Mayock third. Mayock's got a hit on some of these picks. He's missed on some early round picks. He's hit on some late-round picks, but if you just look at the five first-round picks he's had, the value that they've gotten out of those picks has not added up to what it should have been at this point.
He kind of feels like the – for you older baseball fans, he's Rob Deere at the plate right now. He's whew, a lot of swinging, a lot of missing, and when he does make contact, say, on a Max Crosby, he hits the ball a mile. But there's been too many – picks that were should have been gimmies that were swings and catastrophic misses. Now, head coach in the AFC West,
You put me on the spot here. I'm going to say John Gruden is second behind Andy Reid. I still like his offense. I think he can coach an offense. He can get different personnel groupings out there. Obviously, we don't know anything about Brandon Staley as a head coach. He's never done it. And Vic Fangio is probably somewhere down there at the bottom of the division. He really hasn't done much on his time at Denver. He's a better defensive coordinator at this point than he is a head coach. So I think it's safe to say, and it's pretty easy to slide John Gruden in at number two in the AFC West.
Again, I cannot disagree. That is a sound, accurate assessment. When we come back from this quick break, we're going to expand everything to include the AFC, because with the Raiders and with the added game, it'll be interesting to see where Ryan thinks they add up. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Getting engaged is a moment worth cherishing. A one-of-a-kind ring that you design at Blue Nile can help your love sparkle. Just choose your diamond and setting. When you've found the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Finding the right engagement ring can be nerve-wracking. At Blue Nile, you'll have the expert guidance needed and a diamond guarantee that ensures you're getting the highest quality at the best price. Cherish all of life's moments and save up to 30% at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, if we expand the rankings to the AFC as a whole, we'll start back with organizational structure. What do you think that the Raiders' organizational structure fits within the confines of the AFC?
I don't know the exact number, but my guess is they're somewhere in the bottom half of the AFC. Somewhere out of 16 teams, probably in that 8 to 10 range.
That's what
obviously, there's a lot more stability with different organizations. You know, you can start in the AFC West. You can say Buffalo. You can say New England. Miami looks like they're headed in the right direction. You go to the other divisions, you can take Tennessee. You can take some teams that have put some winning seasons together, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Obviously, we talked about Kansas City. So somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, probably, you know, let's just say 9. Let's split the difference and say they're 9.
I agree. So when you give these rankings, you can give like a upper half, lower half. Like, you don't have to give a specific number. Just like what you did
okay
before works. Now, what do you give head coaching? Like, what does John Gruden rank, upper half, lower half of the AFC coaches?
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's won a Super Bowl. I know Raider fans currently aren't probably happy with the results that have happened, but most of the stuff that's gone wrong has gone wrong with the defense. So he's in charge of the offense. I know he's the head coach. His hands are tied. They've made a lot of strides there. So I'm going to say he's in the top half. He's in the upper eight of head coaches in the AFC.
I tend to agree. Like, can't take away that Super Bowl. Can't take away Gruden's offensive acumen. Think the production, as you know, just as well, or even better than most of us, that it hasn't been there. I think that as a head coach, Gruden he has the potential to be in that 6-7 range, but right now he is definitely firmly ensconced in that top 8. Now, we're going to break it down by offensive position. Going quarterback, where do you see Derek Carr in the AFC?
I don't put him right in the middle. I said last year, towards the end of the year, I thought he was the seventh best quarterback in the AFC. I still firmly believe that. I believe there's an easy five or six guys you can put ahead of him. There's a lot of ascending players in the AFC. So let's put him right in the middle and just say eight. Seven, eight.
Now, he also even said the, you know, it's funny how I was just watching a video of Derek Carr today, and he said that even though he doesn't have a ring, but he's a champion at life. We're just going to let that go right now, and we'll let the good listeners form their own opinion about that one. I'm just going to say it.
I'll put my name on it for the listeners. I'll tell you right now, I would personally take Mahomes. I would take Herbert. I would go to the next division. I would take Lamar Jackson. I would definitely take Ryan Tannehill. I would take Josh Allen. There's probably a couple other guys I can't think of off the top of my head. But, yeah, he's somewhere right there. I'd say seventh is right where I put him.
I agree. Now, running back. Now, it's funny with Josh Jacobs. We talked about the one drawback is his lack of, like, home run speed. But other than that, he – and lack of home run speed and the – ability to catch the ball, even though he caught the ball better this year, he just doesn't seem like a natural pass catcher. However, when with the ball in his hands, he does show enough nimbleness and enough strength to be a problem for opposing teams. Where do you rank him overall?
This is an easy one for me. If he's healthy and he plays the whole season, he's a Pro Bowl running back every year because he's going to get his touches. He's going to give you 1,000 yards with a 17-game season. Probably pretty safe to say he's going to give you 12 to 1,500 yards, double-digit touchdowns, and he's going to catch the ball okay out of the backfield. So I'm going to say top three, chance to be a Pro Bowler every year if he's healthy.
I agree. I have him in the top five. I think that what you said, that the extra game will definitely help him statistically, and those numbers are going to be improving. He's going to get his touches. One thing that we have just been on Gruden about so much as far as game plan and all that, but to his credit, he, in spots, has used Josh Jacobs judiciously and hasn't horsed him too much, and that was a concern because given Gruden's past with the love of being able to pound the ball, that I was worried that, you know, Josh Jacobs would be a 320 touch a year guy. And it seems as though Gruden is kind of restraining himself. And that's, to me, like I said, I am not the biggest Gruden fan. That has showed considerable growth on his behalf. And I agree that he's a top three back. Now, offensive line is interesting because the Raiders have had to shuffle. They've had to shuffle a great deal because of their own decisions. What do you see this current incarnation of the line kind of fitting in the AFC?
This is tough because we don't know who the right tackle is going to be at this point. So I'd say the Raiders' offensive line is incomplete, but let's just say we just plug in an average right tackle. They get average production out of whoever that's going to be. I'm going to say this offensive line, based on the guys they're going to have lined up, let's just assume it's Miller, Incognito, James, Good, and an average right tackle. You're probably going to get somewhere, you know, slightly above average production because you're going to get good pass blocking on the left side. You don't have to worry about left tackle. You don't have to worry about left guard, assuming Incognito stays healthy. But it's not going to be as good as it's been in the past. So it's going to be cheaper. It's going to allow them to have a better depth on their roster to other positions. And if they hit a home run at right tackle in the draft, let's say they take a guy in the first round who turns out to be a good player, really like a Tristan Wirfs type, you're going to plug him in. He's going to play 17 games at a very high level. Has a chance to be an above average line.
Now, I agree. I think it'll be about it because it's weird. When Tom Cable was hired, I wasn't the biggest fan considering, you know, everything that happened at the end and the fact that Seattle struggled mightily. But in hindsight, it looks like Seattle just didn't invest much or invest well in their offensive line. That led to Russell Wilson running for his life. Can't really blame Tom Cable for that when he doesn't have the tools to succeed. With this year, like you said, you don't know who the right tackle is, and Tom Cable has managed to craft a solid line? And do you think that there is any way that the Raiders will go interior offensive line with one of their draft picks?
With one of their draft picks, I'm going to say sure. Whether that's a third round or fourth round pick, I don't see it in the top two rounds. But I could definitely see them adding another young guy, maybe a Trey Smith out of Tennessee, Ben Cleveland out of Georgia. You know, one of those guys, because they're going to need to replace Richie Incognito within the next year or two. And I don't think you can count on Incognito lining up for 17 games this year. If you get 10 games out of him, I think that's great. So at some point, John Simpson is going to be called on. At some point, you need to have another guy ready. And going back to Tom Cable, a lot of Raider fans have heaped a lot of praise on Tom Cable for the last, you know, 3 years with the Raiders since he's come back. It's going to be hard to judge him based on that because he had Rodney Hudson, he had Game Jackson, he had Trent Brown for a year. Obviously, they're going to give him credit for what happened with Colton Miller and the development there, but we're really going to find out what kind of offensive line coach Tom Cable is this year. He put all of his eggs in the basket with Andre James. They brought over Nick Martin to add some depth. He's probably going to have a rookie at right tackle. So we'll see. We'll really be able to grade Tom Cable here within the next year or two.
Now, when we come back from break, I want to discuss the rest of the lineups and how the Raiders are able to perhaps challenge for a playoff spot. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes, Ryan. When you look at receiver, now, the Raiders have talent at receiver. They have a bunch of talent. But when you have a quarterback that at times looks risk averse, that tends to end the lack of a true X receiver, you know, an X receiver. But do you see, how do you see that core lining up versus, let's say, or being measured against what the Bills have or what the Steelers have or teams like, or what the Titans have? Where do you see that?
This is tough because, to me, Darren Waller is the X receiver on this team. They use him, they split him out wide a ton. So I actually count him as part as one of the receivers or pass catchers on this team. But for this exercise, we'll exclude Waller, just say straight wide receivers. So we're talking Ruggs, Edwards, Renfro, Brown, Snead, those guys. And, you know, when you take Waller out of the picture, if Waller ever gets hurt, this team's going to be in trouble. So we're going to say a lot of young guys, some slot guys. It's probably in the bottom half of the AFC in terms of a collection or a group. Now, they could easily play themselves into that in the top half. If Edwards comes out and has a season that Raider fans think he will, if Ruggs makes progression like we hope he will, that'll be great. But that's dependent on Derek Carr as well. He's going to have probably less time to throw this year, and he's going to need to figure out a way to navigate the pocket and get the ball down the field to those guys. So we'll see what happens. But right now I'm going to say the Raiders are the wide receiver group in the bottom half of the AFC.
Now, speaking of Darren Waller, this one should be an easy question. Where do you see Waller ranking? I see him, honestly, the only tight end in the AFC that you could argue that is better is Travis Kelce. So I see Darren Waller as a top two.
Yeah, he's top two. It's him and Kelce, and then there's a nice separation from the next guys. Kelce gets the edge because of his red zone production. Not to fault Darren Waller, but he's such a matchup problem in the red zone. You'd like to see them run more slants and more fades to him and just use that big body, which you don't see often. So hopefully that's something we see in the offense in 2021. But he's easily in the top two.
Now, as far as this is a strange question, but with the Raiders, and you call it, you're the first person to call it, that they're going to have to sacrifice something along the offensive line to bolster the defense, and that's exactly what they did. Do you think that slight step back will actually force John Gruden to become a little more aggressive.
Let's hope so. He's going to have to take more chances in the red zone, clearly. And I don't put all that on Gruden. Some of that's on Carr, too. So we have to give them both some blame there. Carr doesn't take a lot of chances in the red zone. John Gruden doesn't call a ton of plays to accentuate the skill sets of the guys he had. Obviously, we've talked ad nauseum on this podcast about the inability to get Edwards and Moreau involved last year. We've talked about trying to get Waller more involved, stop throwing the ball to Jason Witten, which thankfully they can't do this year because he's not on the roster. But let's hope it does. I think adding Kenyon Drake is actually going to be a positive in the red zone. Most Raider fans don't think that, but he's a very effective running ball in the red zone as far as his touchdown percentage. And then getting him on the field with Jacobs and using him as a wide receiver, matching him up, hopefully against linebackers and safeties where he's going to win. Derek Carr is very comfortable throwing the ball to running backs, whether that's on angle routes or option routes. They can use him on drag routes. But you're going to see a lot of Jacobs and Drake on the field together in the red zone.
Now, defensive line has been problematic, but the Raiders, they went more for – well, they did add talent in Ngakoue, but they went also more for numbers and depth by adding Solomon Thomas, Quint McDonald, even more games of David Irving. What do you see that defensive line stacking up?
It's definitely a quantity over quality approach at this point. I'm going to say bottom eight until the production's there. I'm still not sold on Cleve Farrell is a pure pass rusher on third downs. Even moving him inside, I've always said I don't even like him inside. I don't like the move of sliding him down a defensive tackle because he's not going to beat big physical guards. So it's going to come down to Ngakoue and Crosby. They're going to have to win a lot on the outside. I think they have enough pieces on the inside to where you can get three or four sacks out of Jefferson, maybe two sacks out of Thomas, maybe three or four sacks out of Irving. If Mo Hurst makes this roster, maybe two, three, four sacks out of Hurst. They don't have a difference maker on the inside yet. And there's really not one in this draft. So it's going to be interesting how they combat that, what kind of lineups Gus Bradley is going to put on the field, because we know he's not going to blitz. The pressure has to come from the front four. And they're going to have to figure out two interior rushers that can consistently collapse the pocket, or else you're going to see the line slide to Ngakoue, and you're going to have backs and tight ends chipping Crosby, and they're just going to block the two defensive tackles with the three interior guys, or even go one-on-one and then slide a guard over. So unless the Raiders can figure out how to get consistent pressure on the inside, this is still a bottom eight, bottom half of the AFC pass rush.
Now, at linebacker, it's strange because Nick Kwiatkowski was one of the under-the-radar signings, but he played fairly well last year, and Corey Littleton was one where I think after hearing, was it Will Compton, explain the complexities of the Gunther defense and the inflexibility as far as being able to put your players in the best position to succeed, I kind of want to give Corey Littleton a mulligan for last year, and seeing a coordinator in Gus Bradley, who might be a little more amenable to change and being able to use Corey Littleton's athletic ability to his advantage. What do you see that in, if you add Nicholas Moore returning, how do you see those three?
Well, I'm going to give Corey Littleton the benefit of the doubt because he was really good with the Rams and a completely different defense. And the best thing about Gus Bradley's system is he's not going to ask these guys to do a lot. They're basically going to be dropping in coverage in a cover three, and they're going to have either curl responsibility or the hook responsibility, or they're running vertical with against trips if they're running four verts. So they're not going to be asked to do more than three or four different things. So I'm going to hedge my bet and put them in the top half of the league. It's probably closer to eight than it is five. But I think with Kwiatkowski, Middleton, they're going to be in a ton of nickel. They'll be in a lot of dime, too. But I think those two guys will play at an average to above-average level in this defense.
I concur. I think the one thing I love about Gus Bradley, like you said, I like that he doesn't tend to complicate things like Gunther. And it's odd that Gunther, being a Mike Zimmer disciple, you think that he would be a little more clear in his expectations for the defense, but it never seemed to work out that way. Secondary is one of those problem areas that the Raiders actually brought back Carl Joseph. And apparently, you know, he went from Paul Gunther not thinking he was tall enough to actually being tall enough now. What do you see the, I guess two questions. What do you see the addition of Joseph helping, and what do you see that secondary rating?
Well, the addition of Joseph, I'm not on board with it. For if they ask him to play free safety, play single high, and have the coverage responsibilities that that player is going to have in this defense, and they're going to ask him to do it for 17 weeks, I think the Raiders are in trouble. For me, it's another guy that, you know, coming out in college, yeah, he looked like he was going to be a free safety. He was drawing Earl Thomas comparison. He showed the ability to go down in the slot and cover in college. But that's a different animal than doing it in the NFL. And clearly he's been on two different teams now that didn't see him that way. They saw him as a box safety, strong safety with run support, which is where he excels at. Now, luckily, a free safety, he's not going to be asked to match up against tight ends and Kelce and those kind of guys. But he is going to be asked at free safety to cover the deep third, and you're going to have some big physical receivers running down the field he's going to have to match up with. So that's my concern. And I just don't like the fact that, again, you're taking a player who hasn't done it in the NFL at this level, and you're plugging him in and saying, okay, now go run this defense, be a cover three free safety, which might be the most important position in the secondary in this defense. And it's a guy that's never done it. And he was never a guy that was a high coverage quality safety anyways. So hopefully, let's just say that they're going to draft a safety in the first or second round, and then he might play it for 3 or 4 weeks till the rookie's up to speed. Or better yet, he's a backup box safety to John Abram, and then he's playing special teams, and it's a league minimum contract, and I have no problem with the depth. But if they're thinking that he's going to come in and start 17 games of free safety, I think they're not going to be able to run this defense to the level they want to. Now, where would I put the secondary? I'm actually starting to think the Raiders are taking a defensive back in the first round. Just trying to read the tea leaves. Whether that's a corner or a safety, I don't know, or if they trade down and take a corner or safety. But I think Tom Cable has identified a tackle or two that he wants in the second or third round that he thinks can come in and start. So I'm actually think the Raiders are going to address the secondary, which is weird because they spent a lot of picks on Abram and Arnett and obviously Robertson, and they spent a pick on Trayvon Mullins. So they spent a lot of capital there. But I could definitely see them going that way. I still think it's bottom half of the league. Until those guys produce, until Mullen is more consistent, until Arnett can stay on the field and not get hurt, until Abram can actually not blow assignments and make actual tackles in the open field. He's great for the one blow-up hit a game, but there's a lot of knucklehead stuff that goes on. And until they actually figure out who the free safety is going to be, I'd say they fit easily in the bottom eight of the AFC.
I can't really find fault with that. It's one of those things that you mentioned Joseph, perhaps maybe this is just a temporary, you know, starting gig, but I'm thinking of a guy like Mike Williams. Carl Joseph can't cover Mike Williams. That's never going to happen. Mike Williams is fast, and not only that, Mike Williams is about 8 inches taller. How do you cover that downfield?
See, a lot of jump balls down the middle of the field if he's covering those kind of guys on go routes and seam routes and post routes.
And even if they don't want to, even if people want to take Mike Williams out of the equation, look at Denver. Cortland Sutton returns. Another bigger type of receiver. Maybe not as fast as Mike Williams, but still, like, using the body. Now, before we head out, can you tell people where they can interact with you on social media?
Yeah, they can reach out to me on Twitter. The handle is rholm22. It's RHOLM22.
One of the best out there, Ryan Holmes. Thank you so much for joining us on the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.